Welcome to the Master Your Money podcast from drscottbrown.com. Get inside the thinking of investment masters of stocks, bonds, derivatives, retirement, and taxation.
Okay, fantastic. So one of the discussions about the future of Puerto Rico, you know, we've got a big nightmare bond crisis going on down here on the island, and everything's going into meltdown mode. And there's a big question of how the island can kind of move forward in creating a service culture. Big problem that Puerto Rico has is that it's way away from the mainland. So you can't have, for instance, an automotive industry here because the cost of moving the parts around is just too expensive. So a service economy makes a lot of sense. And a mutual friend of ours from Goldman Sachs has asserted that Puerto Rico here in the Caribbean is perfect for creating a financial services business because he thinks it could branch out across all of Latin America, right?
Well, I think your friend and colleague is right. We do have the benefits of some U.S. law. There's a lot of stress in the system, as we all know. But that's also an opportunity for change. And so, you know, there are a lot of good people in Puerto Rico that want things to get better over time. I think it requires, and it's a unique culture, as we all know. People do want things to get, you know, get better over time. And I think if people think really creatively, I mean, you're a professor at the University of Puerto Rico, and you and I have talked about this, you know, I think some of my nieces and nephews should probably think about, well, going to University of Puerto Rico to polish their Spanish for a year as opposed to maybe going to, you know, outside of the U.S. It's you're still in the U.S. You have that experience. So just it's a simple idea,
right?
But there are assets on the island that, you know, all is not lost, all is not chaos. People wake up on the island and do good work every day. You know, they go to their labs and they do good science. They go to their universities. They teach their, well, maybe you're Puerto Rico, not as much right now, but they go and teach their students. I know you continue to work with your students.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the media scares us, sells newspapers or advertising based on the drama. And some of that's true, but there's also a lot of opportunity in San Juan and throughout the island.
I know you've got a friend who did quite an interesting trade in a private placement. Could you give us some details on that?
Well, you and I were talking about this, you know, you've always got to have some dry powder because the interesting thing is these little companies, sometimes they'll be looking for capital for an extended period of time, and then almost in a nanosecond, it can close. And this is whether it's a private deal or a public deal. So there's this trade that a friend of mine did where, you know, there was a deal that was closing. It was a nice discount to the market, and you were going to be locked up for 4 months. And there was a little bit of capital that could be placed, but you had to like literally run to the bank and fill out a wire form within an hour or two. And she did that, and that generated a true liquid 12x return in half a year. You know, that doesn't happen every time, but the point was you got to be able to make a decision. You got to have a little bit of dry powder, and the investment was really made based on the quality of the management of the people. So it doesn't happen every time, but you've got to I think be aware that you've got opportunities that come at you very, very quickly, and they're not measured in months and days, let alone years. They're measured in minutes and hours sometimes. It's kind of interesting.
You know, a colleague in our community feels that only one in about 30 deals works out. So you're basically saying that your friend was able to take $10,000 and so turn it into 100 and, what did you say, 1.2 or 1.5? So 120K, yeah, 120K or 100,000 in turn into 1.2 million K is what you're, 1.2 million, correct?
Yeah.
So I've got we've got a colleague in our entrepreneurial finance community that we both know who strongly believes, and I would corroborate at least from the wide variety of different private placements that I've been involved in or at least been watching over, that only about 1 in 30 private placement deals works out. That's across all industries. So any comments on that? What do you think that the big hit rate is? And obviously not everything is going to be a big hit. You may, maybe in your portfolio you might have 10 losers, but then you have maybe 1.35x, maybe you have 1 or 2 1.2x's. Could you talk a little bit about your experience with return distribution, not only within your own personal experience, but also with the vast experience and knowledge you've had from seeing so many others do this?
You know, it's really interesting you bring that up, Scott, because yesterday I read something written by Dave McClure. You know, he's famous for 500 startups, and he talks about getting a 50x, that if you're a brilliant picker, you're going to have that in 1 out of 50 deals, but if you're average, it's like 1 out of 100 deals. So he's making the argument that you should invest like he does, literally in 500 startups. So that's how he sees it, you know, and he's obviously quite successful. I guess, you know, for me personally and, you know, people I work with, we've done it differently. We said, look, we're only going to do a new co, a startup every couple of years, but we're going to actively manage it. We're going to, you know, if there's an issue, we'll bring in, you know, other people, other technology or what have you, because we've gotten our friends in it. We're going to fight to get them a decent return. So, and maybe both are true, but anyway, those are some numbers I've seen. So you're, you know, the 1 in 30 number is a good number probably. But I think, I also think you can really roll up your sleeves and change that number.
Well, you know, from what I'm hearing, if I were sitting in a position, maybe I'd finished medical school, you know, now I've got my own practice. The practice is finally starting to cash out. I'm 35, 40 years old, and I want to get more serious as an investor. And I'm listening to this call, I'd probably sit there and think, geez, you know, if I've got to go out there and roll money into 30 deals, maybe instead of 150,000 each, maybe 15 or even 10,000 each. So how can people kind of deal with the risk involved? And of course, you know, the normal, most direct way to reduce risk is to simply reduce the amount of money going into the front of each deal. So I've seen a lot of private placements being pitched, and of course the salesmen always seem to want $100,000 as initial investment, but if, you know, only 1 in 30 are going to roll in a lot of situations, I don't think I'd be very comfortable with 100,000 in. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think you want to not have super concentrated investments. You don't want to do just one deal at 100 grand. If you go to 100 grand to invest, you probably should figure out a way to be in 10 deals over time, or at least 5 deals over time, mm-hmm. and have some diversification. You know, and obviously you can, you know, move those numbers around and they evolve over time. So I'm really not saying that, you know, the McClure numbers are wrong. I think it's very helpful to think about it like that. I'm just sort of saying as an entrepreneur, hopefully you become a better investor if you do both, and you become a better entrepreneur and a better investor. And I think you can, you know, you can actively manage your investments. But if you're not, you know, if it's not your day job, then I would argue then, yeah, you probably need to make more investments, right? You probably need to spread the exposure and go into it with that. Mm-hmm. So if you have $250,000 to invest, you're sure not putting it all into the first, you know, deal at your angel group in Wichita, Kansas. You better be putting that in, you know, in $25,000 or $10,000 increments. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can get access to most deals like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. So I guess what I'm hearing you say is that maybe I'm a really nice family practice physician, and, you know, I really love the people all, and I have a real passion for helping people and healing people. And then suddenly I'm thrust into this financial world where it seems to be all cut and dry and hard to understand what the real rules are. And now maybe I'm talking with somebody who's promoting a pharmaceutical private placement, and they seem to be demanding $100,000. But what you're saying is I could be as creative as I wanted to. I could say, look, you know, I'll give you $25,000 initially, and if it goes well, I'll feed in up to a total of $100,000. You're saying people could actually do that if they wanted to.
You're exactly right to bring that up, Scott, because you got to keep. I didn't say this, but you did. You know, you've got to have some dry powder, because, you know, you'd be a good company that does a down round. If you don't have any dry powder, then you really, you know, are truncating your gain. And so, you know, if you like it, you need to have some dry powder for that, you know, and have the discipline to, you know, to invest like that.
Bill Garner is a physician investor and entrepreneur. Go to egbventures.com to discover more about biopharma investment opportunities.
Yeah, you know what? But the reality is that there's a lot of factors that come into finding that 50x deal. And it's like McClure is saying that if people, well, like I said, our friend of ours from Goldman Sachs, or let's just say that I know him, okay? He loves to say that the statistics show that the average American spends less time selecting their stock than the time they invest in selecting their cell phone. So what you're saying is if you're willing to use your brain and go in there and think and look at the deal really hard, you can get a pretty good idea from what McClure is saying as to what's likely to be a bad deal. And you've talked about that already. So let's say that you're in three different scenarios. Let's do a little sensitivity analysis. You've got deal number one. From your own personal vast experience or from Bill Garner's vast experience, this is a deal that looks like a real hot winner. All the stars are lined up, the market's bullish, everything's kind of looking good and rosy and fuzzy for this firm. Number two is a situation where maybe the general market's flat, maybe there's some technology questions that are not easy to answer, but everything else looks reasonably good for the deal, so that's kind of a midway deal. And then there's another deal that has a whole bunch of potential problems and barriers and stuff, but of course if it gets out of the gate, it could be like a 100x deal or something like that, and then we would call that our weakest deal. So if I was, for instance, a financially trained accredited investor, I would prefer to do an initial test purchase with a larger amount into the deal that I had a stronger sense from analytical analysis, not emotional analysis, that deal had better wheels under it, and that I'd want to test with less money on the deal that was more speculative and looked like it had more technological problems ahead of it. And so I think for what you're telling me is that I might only be willing to test that weaker deal with $10,000 and roll another 20 into it, but maybe with a stronger deal, I might be willing to test that deal with 25 or even 35 or $50,000 and maybe roll 250 into that. And so what you're basically saying is it's really, really important to develop the relationship of the promoter of the deal, the person who's organizing it or the administrator of the deal, and communicate all of this to them, and you're saying they'll be receptive to that.
I think if they're not, you can vote with your feet. I guess I should have said up front that when we form a company, typically work with a scientist or several scientific colleagues or clinicians, we've often looked at 500 or 1,000 opportunities before we start a deal. So, you know, I just don't know that McClure would look at 500 deals times, let's say, you know, 1,000. Do they have the bandwidth to look in depth at that many deals? I doubt it. So it's just it's a different way of going about it. And if they're a little more passive, that's probably appropriate, you know. And you know, most stock pickers have a hard time over an extended period beating indices, and I think only entrepreneurs who are really good are able to beat the averages as well.
Completely agree. Yeah, and it goes back to, again, what our colleague from Goldman Sachs says: if you're willing to use your brain and invest more time into looking for investments and you spend on selecting your cell phone, you can actually increase your average return.
Yeah, I mean, health is important, but your financial health is worth an investment of time too, right? It's very, very important. And I think people, as you're saying, people sometimes don't invest sufficient energy. They're more worried about researching some entertainment option. If they put the same energy into their investment decisions, they'd probably be better off.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So are there any other stellar examples that kind of get you excited about the possibilities in private placements that you can share with us?
Well, I don't have anything that immediately comes to mind. We're talking about pharmaceuticals here. at some point, I think we'll talk about, you know, you want to pick the parts of the pharmaceutical value chain where you invest. And one thing I think we could talk about is, it sounds simple, but just being cognizant of where the product or product you're investing in fit there, you know. And the analogy is in real estate is location, location, location. So sometimes we look at, you know, stage of development, stage of development, stage of development, meaning, you know, has something had previous government investment of, say, tens of millions of dollars or even hundreds of millions of dollars to get to the point where now you're investing in it in an entity that has, you know, a much lower valuation than the, all the grant funding would have suggested. So anyway, that's I think that's one thing that I think we can talk about at a future time.
Perfect, perfect. Okay, great. So I think we've got a pretty good batch of information to get people started who are accredited investors thinking about the directions that they need to go in. And of course, if you're listening to this and you're not an accredited investor, Bill cannot talk with you. So don't worry about that. I mean, just use the information that you learned on the call so that when you do become wealthy enough to be an accredited investor, you won't be somebody who gets taken advantage of. That's really what Bill and I are trying to do here, is just make sure that whoever you are listening to this call, that you don't get taken advantage of like we have in private placement deals, like both of our families have. We want to make sure that you go through as little pain as possible and you don't end up losing the home you live in like Bill did, right, Bill?
Yeah, if in doubt, don't do it. You know, that's an extraordinary, you know, example. It was, you know, something I bought as a resident. I really didn't want to lose it, but, you know, I'll get it back. But that's something you can do in your 20s and 30s. You don't want to do it later in life.
No, no, not at all. But we've all had some hard knocks and we've survived it and we're alive today as investors to help others. And that's what this podcast is all about. And I really appreciate your taking the time, Bill, to talk with my university students, because this is produced on behalf of the University of Puerto Rico Business School Student Alumni Association. And I know that you've got I've read your book. It's extremely good. Is it up on Amazon?
Yeah, Garnering Capital is on Amazon as both a Kindle, and there's a paperback available as well.
Yeah, and I highly recommend it. So if you're listening to this call, make sure that you go get the book, Garner on Capital, and that's available right now in either Kindle or hard copy on Amazon.com. And that's going to give you an additional dimension of education in terms of becoming a private placement investor. Any final words before we break, Bill?
The book is Garnering Capital, and it's got a chapter from a very smart, high-tech Silicon Valley engineer who has a first-time fund now, who I think is really savvy. I've learned a lot of things from him, although he invests not in pharmaceuticals but in high tech. And there's a contribution from also someone who was at the Kauffman Foundation. They really studied technologies coming out of universities and that technology transfer and commercialization, which you know, which is part of growing the economy throughout the world, and in particular in Puerto Rico, there's some efforts being made to make sure that we're part of that in the development of Puerto Rico going forward. So thanks very much, Scott, to you and to the University of Puerto Rico.
Thank you so much, Bill. And for listeners of this call, if you're interested in ordering Bill's book on Amazon and you can't quite find the wording that we just gave you, just check in the description of this iTunes podcast, and I'll have the name of the book listed right there for you to find, so you can go to Amazon and pick it up. Thanks again so much, Bill, for enlightening our students.
Thanks, Scott. Buen dia.
Buen dia también.
Here's where the rubber hits the road so that you can start to think and grow rich. Go to drscottbrown.com right now to get an online stock investment training worth $200 for free, entitled How an Illiterate 18-Year-Old Minimum Wage McDonald's Cook Becomes a Millionaire in 50 Years.